This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So Matt Dillon is a James Beard award-winning chef in Seattle. He's got a whole bunch of restaurants opened here. One of his most beloved is Sitka and Spruce. This was a restaurant that started in like a strip mall type of space here in the Eastlake neighborhood of Seattle before it moved into Capitol Hill. People love that place. People really, really like Matt Dillon. Unfortunately, they are ending at the end of this year all restaurant service there. And the reason it's happening is because of increased costs of doing business in Seattle. And he did an interview with the Seattle Times very briefly with the Seattle Times food writer Bethany Jean Clement and said, in order to buy great product and pay a great wage that people can live on in our city, the math just doesn't work. There's going to be a reckoning big time. I don't think it's going to be pretty. Now, this news came as some shock to a lot of loyal customers, to a lot of former workers. Simone Pitzka-Barron, for example. She talked to me last night. She was someone who actually worked for Matt Dillon. She said, Dillon was doing this as good, if not better, than any restaurant I've worked in. If he can't do it, I'm not sure anyone who has a restaurant in the same vein will be able to pull it off. She continues. He was navigating the minimum wage as good as anyone. We were paid minimum wage plus had a tip line. The fact that he's closing makes me scared for the rest. The law never addressed how employers were to deal with these increases. When you cut into a razor-thin margin, it creates an instability. If you talk to people who work in this industry, in the restaurant industry, whether you're talking to chefs or restaurateurs or the wait staff, they will all tell you one thing. It's not easy getting by. When you open a restaurant in any neighborhood, let alone Seattle, you're working with razor-thin margins. You're not making an arm and a leg. You are not running home to jump into that swimming pool filled with dollar bills and gold coins. You're barely scraping by, and Matt Dillon is one of the best in our region. He's not the only one who's been suffering here. Dan Austin, who owns the West Seattle restaurant Peel and Press, told me last night, I agree with Matt that a reckoning is coming. Most small owners are faced with a $1.50 wage increase both in 2020 and 2021. For many small restaurants, that's going to be $75,000 to $150,000 in added costs. Many restaurants don't make that much in profit. People have been saying this for such a long time, especially in the restaurant industry, that all of these changes that the Seattle City Council and the mayor's office are putting good people out of business. Sizzle Pie just shut its doors in Capitol Hill. They cited, quote, continually rising overhead and operating costs in Seattle. Last year, it was, I believe, June or July, Dan Springer, our friend over at Fox News, he covered a local restaurant group that filed for bankruptcy, and part of the reason why they did that was they cited the minimum wage costs. Well, in that group of restaurants, Henry's Tavern. Henry's Tavern, the best burger in a restaurant that you'll get in Seattle, just closed its doors over the weekend. Two locations in Seattle, and then another one in Bellevue. Biscuit Bitch, the owner, Kimmy Spice, she's the one who sent out that scathing letter to the council about the rising costs, getting nickel and dimed on absolutely everything. And in that letter, she wrote, every time I turn around, I'm paying a new tax for a sign permit or an awning or a table outside, B&O tax, sugar tax, a myriad of licenses, elevator permits, health permits, higher property taxes that are passed on to me, etc. Restaurants all across this country, but especially in cities that are mandating this $15 minimum wage increase, they're struggling. The New York Post just had a piece out for restaurants in New York City that said, quote, restaurants are feeling the heat from the minimum wage hikes, cutting staff hours and even closing kitchens as they struggle to shoulder the extra payroll costs. Virtually the same exact story was in the Los Angeles Times just a couple months ago. All of this is happening as a lot of folks in the media are pretending that, oh, you know, it's just restaurants come and go, which is true. They do come and go. But when you start to get the data and the anecdotes that suggest they're going for a very specific reason, maybe you should be paying attention. A lot of people from the Full Service Workers Alliance of Seattle, this is a local advocacy group, activists fighting against policies that they believe will hurt service workers in the industry, they brought attention to the fact that Bethany Jean Clement, this Seattle Times food writer, wrote this piece because she has a history of dismissing concerns over the impact that the minimum wage increases would have on restaurants. In fact, even in the comment section of her own article over at the Times, she was downplaying the concern. She says, oh, you know, really, this is more about a shortage of restaurant workers than anything. You got to pay way more because you don't have that many people who are willing to work. That's not it at all. And all you have to do is ask the people who are directly impacted. And the funny thing about this is not Matt Dillon, this evil conservative who's pushing this. This is a guy who, by all accounts, is a progressive dude who wanted to do well by his workers. But at some point, you have to realize that these lists of things you have to accomplish to be considered progressive doesn't always make sense. It's not always practical, especially when you're looking at an industry like this. At some point, you have to be able to compromise, but this council doesn't want to compromise. You can believe in deeply progressive Seattle ideals while also promoting things that work, workable policies, workable solutions. Because Dillon is in a tough spot. He was in a tough spot this entire time. And it seems like Seattle is making it actively more difficult to own and operate a restaurant here, and I don't know exactly why. Just so you can say that you've promoted a fair living wage, even though it's causing people to lose their jobs? You don't want to allow for a tip credit for these restaurant workers? Because you don't want to piss off the labor unions? Really? This is a city that's led by people like Shama Sawan and Lisa Herbal, two council members who are up for re-election, who seem more intent on passing extreme bills, extreme legislation to prove that they're progressive. But they have no interest in actually proposing solutions that can help so many of these businesses that employ so many of these people. Now, I would love it if you would help me shine a spotlight on this story. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to this story so you can not just read, but also post on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and everywhere else you can. Do it right now. Take out that phone, put in the number 1-800-465-8770, and send the keyword RANTZ. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
Former Army captain announced earlier today that he's running for Congress in Washington's 8th District. His name is Jesse Jensen. He's going to be on the show later this afternoon. He'll be stopping by about 4:45. I hope you listen to it because he's going to take us through why he's decided to run, how he plans on beating Kim Schreier. Did you know she's a doctor? Because she likes to tell you every single moment that you say her name, that you read her name, that you think her name, you think and know immediately that she's a doctor, even though it turns out on healthcare, she's not really that strong. This is a person, Kim Schreier, who has absolutely no business representing the 8th District. This is a district that's not progressive Seattle. This is Sammamish. This is Issaquah and Auburn and Wenatchee and Ellensburg. These are places that should not look like it's represented by someone who's from Seattle. These are all places that progressive Seattle hates. You think they like Sammamish? They look at Sammamish and think, oh, that's the place where privileged white people live. They look at Leavenworth as a place that they can maybe go for a few hours on a weekend, get trashed, and then maybe go for a hike or pretend to, just so you can take some Instagram photos, and then go back home to Seattle where you can really live like a sophisticated person. Jensen sounds like a guy who actually represents this district. This is a guy who has spent 7 years in the Army. He deployed as a platoon leader in Afghanistan. He lives in Bonnie Lake with his family. He's now currently a manager at Amazon. And just looking at what this campaign in 2020 for the re-election is going to look like, my guess is a lot of this is going to have to do with healthcare, whether or not you want to talk about it. But you know what? I'm glad to talk about healthcare as it relates to Kim Schreier. Dr. Kim, did you know she's a doctor? You know, she's a doctor. Pediatrician.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's a doctor.
Wow.
Dr. Kim Schreier.
I'm amazed.
Dr. Kim Schreier supports Medicare for All. Medicare for All would kick you off of your private health insurance even if you don't want to leave it. Most of us are pretty happy with our insurance, especially if it's provided by our employer. I'm on a wonderful plan with United Health. I love it. It covers pretty much everything I needed to cover. I have asthma medication that usually, if I don't have insurance, would cost me like $300 or something. But with them, it cost me like $40. I'm happy with what I get from this insurer. Unfortunately, under a Medicare for All plan, which they have no clue as to how they're going to actually pay for it, they would kick me off of that plan. They would kick you off of that plan. They would force you to get into a government-sponsored healthcare system. And you know what? The government doesn't really run these kind of big programs very well. You know how I know? Like paying attention to literally how any other major program is run by the federal government. So I look forward to my conversation with Jesse Jensen, who's going to be stopping by at 4:45. And if you don't think that this particular race matters, understand that even if you don't live in Washington's 8th, this was a pickup for the Democratic Party. They were able to spend their way into taking this from Republican hands when Dave Reichert decided to retire. This is just one more vote in favor of impeachment. This is going to be an important race. So I can't wait to talk with Jesse at 4:45.
PH.
Hey, don't forget, at 5 o'clock, I'm going to give you a chance to win a pair of Seahawks tickets to this Thursday night football matchup against the Rams. Right, the Rams?
Yes, the Rams.
They're not doing so good.
Yeah, they lost big yesterday.
But they're also a team that's kind of difficult for the Seahawks, right?
Yeah.
Okay, see, I know what it is I'm talking about. This is going to be a huge game. It's going to be a big game. You're going to get to actually check it out at CenturyLink on Thursday. I'm going to give you a keyword at 5 o'clock. Stick around for that. Till then, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Fake news.
So there was another bombshell report in the New York Times that turns out wasn't a bombshell report at all. In fact, they tried to get around the embarrassment of admitting that they kind of oversold this particular story. They did what's called a stealth edit. Do you know what a stealth edit is?
No, but it sounds stealthy.
It's very stealthy. You see, they make a small change that actually means a lot, but they don't tell anybody. Sometimes when you go onto a website like for the New York Times or the Seattle Times or Tacoma News Tribune, although that's a trashy newspaper. I mean, so is the Times, frankly. But you go there, and let's say they make an edit that's pretty substantial that maybe changes a main point or corrects a misspelling or a misunderstanding, whatever it is. They usually go, update, 4:12 this afternoon, we changed this sentence to say this because of this, right? You do that because you want to keep people sort of up to speed with the changes that you're making to a story that maybe they've already read and already decided to change their mind on. Well, in this case, New York Times prints a piece that says Trump met with the head of the NRA, Wayne LaPierre. And the claim was that the NRA would defend President Trump against impeachment if, and only if the president dropped some of his gun control legislation. So they were showing this story to say, see how the evil NRA works and look how easily Trump can be bought by special interest groups like the NRA. The story said, quote, it was not clear whether Mr. Trump asked Mr. LaPierre for his support or if the idea was pitched by the NRA. But in return for the support, Mr. LaPierre asked that the White House stop the games, quote, over gun control legislation. Now, this got picked up because you know what that actually says? That's quid pro quo, kind of like the stuff that was being alleged with Ukraine. Quid pro quo. You do this, I'll do that. Oh, my God, so corrupt. Ted Lieu, the congressman from California who spends most of his day moonlighting basically as a Twitter troll, he tweeted out, if the below article is accurate, it appears Donald Trump seeks to trade action on legislation in exchange for financial support from the NRA. That would be illegal. A felony, to be exact. Judd Legume, a progressive activist who has a blue check mark, said Trump met with Wayne LaPierre and asked if the NRA would finance his impeachment defense. LaPierre said he would if Trump promised not to pursue any gun legislation. Funny thing is, that's not even in the report originally, but he decided to put it out there anyway because they're all liars. Hours later, already after the story got its traction, got its retweets, got its likes, got its shares, went everywhere, they made a little bit of a change. But remember, it's a stealth edit, so they didn't actually tell anybody. But some folks on Twitter noticed. And they took the screenshots of the stories, put them side by side. And they changed a little tiny thing that actually changes the intent of the entire crux of the article. They took out the words, but in return for the support. So no longer does it say, but in return for the support, Mr. LaPierre asked that the White House stop the games over gun legislation. It now says, during the meeting, Mr. LaPierre asked if the White House would stop the games over gun control legislation. Now, during the meeting could mean it literally happened at any point, including before the talk about defending impeachment even took place. It could not have any connection directly or indirectly to it whatsoever. That changes the story completely. That's a massive shift in what it is that they were saying. And the NRA, by the way, came out and said categorically, we deny any discussion occurred about special arrangements pertaining to the NRA support of the president and vice versa. The new study, or excuse me, the new story with that edit points to exactly what the NRA just said in their categorical denial. Ted Lieu didn't fix it. In fact, I saw some people putting out the update and say, oh, well, this doesn't change the crux of the argument at all, except it literally changes it in its entirety. This is how fake news works, and this is why fake news, a term I don't personally like, nor do I subscribe to, but it's a term that's being used because of stuff like this. Because this is dirty and dishonest. This is absolutely dirty and dishonest, and they do this because they understand that the vast majority of the people, they're not even going to know that they made this small edit. They're not even calling attention to it because they don't care if you get the news correctly. They just care that you got their intent, and their intent was to shame the president. Their intent was to bring this on top of him and say, look, quid pro quo, this is what the NRA does, and this is how President Trump acts. That's problematic, to say the least. I like using that term now because progressives like to say problematic. So I'm taking ownership of the word and turning it around on them.
Good job.
I mean, you didn't really sell that. I didn't really feel like you cared.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jason, I love your thought process here.
And now you're overselling it.
That is incredibly genius and original of you.
Too far. Nope, too far. Pull back just a little bit. So, like, at that point, you went way too far.
Okay.
So, it's like, that was a 10. Let's bring it down to a 7.
Wow, Jason, that's pretty witty of you.
I mean, okay. Let's go with that one. Put that in the movie. Put that on the doc. Yeah, put that one there. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So, the Washington State Patrol says they're going to buy 3 2020 Ford Interceptor hybrid SUVs. The first purchase of hybrid vehicles for the agency. CoinTV reports that the purchase of the hybrids is part of a pilot project to basically see whether or not these hybrid SUVs can actually perform the way that you would want them to in cases of high-speed chases or needing to get into terrain that maybe is a little bit more difficult, requires a little bit more, you know, engine power. And there's some concern, of course, that when you're talking about a car that you plug in, maybe it's not going to perform to the best of your sort of what you necessarily would need to address, in this case, emergencies, right? So it's one thing to say if you're just kind of doing your business at delivering the mail and your hybrid postal car is a little bit slow, okay, you lose a little bit of time. It's not that big of a deal. It is kind of a big deal when you're on a high-speed chase.
Yeah, if it can't catch, you know, the quote-unquote bad guy that they're chasing, what's the point?
Right!
I like the days where they had the Dodge Charger with the SRT8 and the big Hemi in it. Give me that. Give me more of that.
That's a beast of a... Yeah, that was a car, right?
Yeah.
That's a beast of a car. I'm all down with that. It's funny because we did this story last week from Fremont, California, where they ended up getting in Fremont, the police department there, got the Tesla cars and tried to use them. And unfortunately, during a high-speed chase, the battery power ran out because I guess the night before they didn't plug it in properly. You know, mistakes happen. I just don't remember the last time we had a case of we were supposed to plug it in. We're supposed to gas it up, but we forgot that morning and we ran out of gas. Like, those stories don't happen all that often, so I am kind of curious where this goes. Now, at the end of the day, if during this pilot program, they're all like, yeah, it works exactly the way we need it to, and we're going to save a whole bunch of money, awesome, go ahead and do that. Just make sure we stick, and to be fair, the patrol spokesperson, Chris Loftus, said, we're not going to buy more than these three. Okay, that's fine with me. You have three there. You know, make sure there's some, plan B just in case one of those cars gets involved in one of these chases or needs to get into an area that you might need that engine thing that he just talked about. What was it?
One of the Dodge SRT8 Hemis?
No, but whisper it in my ear so I can
Dodge see. SRT.
Like one Hemis. Of those Dodge SRT8 Hemis. Like if that... Why are you looking at me? I knew that. Just make sure you've got a backup plan is all I'm saying. Yeah. Like, eco-friendly, cool. Saving money, cool. Until some bad guy gets away. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877. And the ones that they do end up prosecuting, It moves at a snail's pace. This according to a study by a group of local businesses hoping to put some political pressure on the attorney to do his damn job. Joining me on the line to react is Seattle Police Officers Guild Vice President Officer Mike Solon. Mike, thank you so much for coming on.
Jason, appreciate the opportunity.
So, is there any disputing the findings of this report?
No, not at all. And it's not surprising at all. And I think what it highlights is the fact that, hey, the proud professional police officers of the men and women of the Seattle Police Officers Guild are doing their jobs. And the activists in this city, and particularly the elected officials who are screaming reform and accountability, well, we're doing our job. Why aren't they doing theirs? And so for us to continue down this path, what I mean by us is this community, we need to hold our elected officials, in particular the city attorney's office, to do their job.
What does that mean? How do you hold them accountable, especially given the fact that this has been going on for a very long time and they've not changed their tone at all?
No, not at all. And Jason, again, I said it before, is it surprising? It's not. I mean, if you look at the report, which is an amazing report, I mean, hats off to the Downtown Business Association for putting part two together. And it goes in line with what we're trying to push is a positive narrative about how the men and women of this police department, the union, are doing commendable work in such a hostile environment, where policies and administrative issues are put in place to handcuff the officer. But given all that obstruction by activists who are controlling the narrative and elected officials, we still show up on a daily basis and wear that uniform with pride, service, and dedication. I'm not sure, at least what it illustrates in this report, that our elected officials, in particular the city attorney's office, have that same mindset or care about the majority of these citizens who do not have that loud activist voice who are begging for public safety. And shame on the city attorney's office for conducting their behavior in this fashion. It is atrocious. It's despicable. And Jason, what else are we to do here besides just tell people that Seattle is in a dire predicament, and the only solution is to vote these people out of office if they want change?
And that's a message that would appear says to me that you legitimately don't think anything's going to change regardless of the political opinion on this, because it does seem like, to your point, you know, folks who are very loud, those are the ones who are professional activists who can show up to a meeting at, you know, 1 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon. Everybody else who has a job or a family or a life, they hold the same opinions, which is we should be putting bad guys in jail, making sure that these repeat offenders are actually taken care of. But their voice isn't represented in this council, and it's a voice that's being completely ignored by the Seattle City Attorney's Office, who says, by the way, oh, we just don't have the funding to go about it. But then when you look into how much funding they've been asking for, not the money they've been asking for is the money that suddenly they say they need. And we certainly haven't heard any sense of urgency coming from Pete Holmes's office about how dire it is to get a bigger staff. I've heard nothing from his office.
Yeah, nor will you. And that's the sad reality of this. I mean, this is an amazing report, and the work that was put into place to get this thing released to the public, to educate the masses, that silent majority that are begging for public safety, is commendable. However, you're not going to see any type of reaction other than say, you know, we just don't have it in our budget. Yeah. Well, you know what? There are so many different areas within this budget, which was just released at $6.5 billion with a B. You mean to tell me that we can't solve this problem, the city attorney's office can't solve that problem? I can tell you one solvable area to fix this problem if they're screaming about lack of money. Look at the red light camera traffic infractions. That used to be for school safety, that money that was allotted for school safety. That has been pulled back, and then now it's put back into the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, we're talking almost $20 million that generates for the city on a yearly basis. You mean to tell me you can't use that money for this specific purpose. This is why this election is so incredibly important to vote these people out of office, because we are losing control of this city. What I mean by we, it's not just the police officers that are represent the community at large. I'm talking about the moms and dads that work, just like you pointed out, on a daily basis, that don't have time to engage in this discussion. I'm telling you, Jason, and I've said this before, it is so critically important that people participate, because the activists are driving the narrative, not just locally, but regionally and statewide. I mean, we're seeing it in the I-940, Senate House Bill 1064, when it comes to independent investigations. Jason, they are driving Seattle's activist political agenda to infect the entire state. And I'm telling you, if we do not wake up and participate the way that we have a constitutional right to do, we're in serious trouble.
Yeah.
And the police officers that work the street, and it's illustrated in this report very well, that we conduct our jobs in a professional manner on a daily basis. If we don't get a hold of this, Jason, we can't help the public. So I'm asking the public, please, help us help you. We all need this for everybody's public safety. It's so critical.
Officer Mike Solon is the vice president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, SPOG. That is, of course, the union representing Seattle police officers. You know, I talk to cops on a regular basis who complain that they'll arrest someone and then they see that same exact someone doing the same exact thing that originally got that person arrested the very next day or a couple days later, because they're not actually charging these folks. And so when you see this kind of result coming from city attorney's office, what impact does that have on cops?
It's almost like you wake up and you get gut punched. Because there's one case in particular in the report, but there's over 200 pages for an investigation. That's a lot of paperwork. And it shows you that the officers still care, despite what's happening, the decay of this city, that we still put that uniform on and we want to get to work. But Jason, it's not going to last forever. I mean, I can't tell you, almost on a daily basis, people are just like, this place is out of control, mm-hmm. Crazyville. And they're seeing that their life's long work, they're dedicated to this profession, it is being stripped from them for political purposes. And that is so decaying to our mental mindset, that the men and women that actually take the oath of office to serve this public, they see it as absolutely fruitless. And so when the city releases a 12-point retention and recruitment work group project, and none of those issues really look at the serious problems, the true problems that are plaguing this city, I mean, it's just laughable how incompetent these policies are put in place and how harmful it is to the men and women that work this city. But I'm going to tell you, Jason, that we at SPOG are doing everything we can in conjunction with these types of reports to educate the public of how bad this is. But we have solutions. We still care, and we will fight for you. We're just asking, please help us. It comes down to that one call on the street. Show support for police officers, vote these council people out of office, vote the city attorney out of office, and have a say in how your city is governed. We've absolutely had enough, but I will not stop. I will continue to fight and stand up for our membership and stand up for the true voice that is this large, silent majority. Seattle is a wonderfully diverse community. Our membership reflects that, and we will not be stopped by this social justice ideology that is tearing us all apart. All we're asking for is common sense, middle ground. That's it. All we're asking.
There are a lot of candidates out. There are a lot of candidates out there right now in the Seattle City Council who hold the exact same viewpoints as you guys do. Yesterday, we talked with King County Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknick, who announced her endorsement of Phil Tavel running up against Lisa Herbold, the incumbent. Is SPOG doing enough to be vocal in this upcoming election? Have you put out any endorsements yet?
Well, I can tell you that we have our first ever public safety Seattle City Council forum. It's a public safety forum that 9th, and it's invitation only. And it shows you, and it shows the community, that SPOG has buy-in 100% with this crisis, this public safety crisis. We are all in with this, and we have a hand in this election. We are doing everything we can, and we will have endorsements possibly right after this forum. So, Jason, we're not going to rest. We're not going to lay down and give up, and we're not going to let the activists win and continue to drive the narrative.
Yeah,
and we are true professionals that represent this community, and we care deeply about this community, and we will continue to fight, and we'll illustrate that by educating the public and showing the public that we deeply care.
Good. And the thing is, you talk to any officer, it's very, very, very clear that they care, and the frustration continues to build. And it's funny because as we've reported for the last year of the mass exodus of cops, at first the Seattle City Council and the mayor's office said, oh, no, it's a Jenny Durkin says it's not true what I reported. And then 6 months later say, OK, it is true. So we're going to address it. And how do they address it? By still keeping their heads buried deep in the sand, not actually addressing any of the problems that you've talked about. We wish you the best of luck. You know that on the show and on the station, we back the blue 100% of the time. We love the work that you're doing with SPOG. Keep it up. We'll be here fighting on behalf of the same values that you're pushing right by your side. We've been talking with Officer Mike Solon, the VP of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. Officer, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Jason, I appreciate what you're doing.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Live in the Online Trading Academy studio, Gene Buck used to be known as the FYI guy over at the Seattle Times, but now kind of just uses data to pursue progressive social justice causes. He's got a new piece out in the Seattle Times where he notes, quote, Seattle median household income soars to $93,500, but wealth doesn't reach everyone, census data shows. Did you know that? We should have come in with the breaking news sounder that wealth doesn't reach everyone.
Oh, that's news to me. I didn't know that.
But that's like, this is, oh my whole worldview has changed because of this. No kidding. Yes, we understand that wealth doesn't hit everybody. We know that. In fact, the vast majority of people don't have wealth, right? Now, in Seattle, the vast majority of people are doing well. $93,500, that's good. That's a good median income. Why is it where it is? Well, for the most part, you're talking about a lot of people who work in technology or radio. These are people who work in technology, right? You got a lot of people who work at Amazon. You got a lot of people who work at various tech companies here in Seattle. They pay more because they require a higher level of skill set, and they end up having to pay for that. And a lot of people live where they work. It's by design. Seattle City Council and the mayor's office had made traffic so bad, they've incentivized people to stay near Amazon where they work, which drives the prices of rent through the roof again, so that they can complain about how expensive it is to live here, even though they're the ones responsible. Now, there are some implications that exposes, Gene Buck believes, some sort of racism, systemic, some kind of racism that we need to really, really take account of and then do something with. So they break down the Seattle income by race. Because again, remember, you have to view everything through the prism of social justice. So white people, on average, make $105,000 and change. Asians at $95,000 and change. Pacific Islanders, $72,000. Multiracial, $67,000. Latino, $67,000. Native American, $63,000. And black people, $42,000 and change. Okay. So you look at this, and you're supposed to say, wow, Seattle? Racism, man. I mean, why are black people only making $42,000 but the white man? And I bet the cisgendered, heterosexual, Christian white man, why does he make $105,000? Because white people overwhelmingly go into computer programming and African Americans, as of right now, do not. Now, there's a really good way to go about changing that, right? Going into communities of color and say, hey, You guys should think about getting into tech because that's where the pay is. That's where the job security is. That's why we have CodeFellows.org/KTTH as a sponsor, is because it is so important to get into this field and learn this information. African Americans are underrepresented because they don't go into that field. And that's why in a city that's driven by so many tech jobs, that particular community isn't doing as well as whites and Asians. That's why. And the same thing when you look at men versus women. You have more men making more money in this region than women because, again, same exact issue. More men are getting into these fields than women. Now, I think you can have a very valid argument about why that might be. You could certainly say systemic sexism or systemic racism at some point in education that made it easier for white people to get into computer programming than not. I think that's a valid conversation. You can also say that if you come from a community of color, you might be in a school district that doesn't get that much money from tax dollars funneled into the public school system, which means they don't necessarily have the best technology in the world for them to even offer computer programs. I think we should have those conversations. It's important. And actually, let me take that back. We don't have to have that conversation. We already know that that's a fact. So let's go ahead and do something about it. But what I cannot stand is when they throw things out like this and you're supposed to immediately say, oh, wow, there's a lot of income inequality in Seattle because of something that we did. We got to do something. These white people, they're taking advantage and black folks are victim of white. No, it has to do in large part with issues that can be addressed, but not at Amazon, not at Microsoft. And not even on a citywide level. You've got to go into the communities and change these kinds of things. This is being driven by tech. Not because tech industry is racist or sexist. Has nothing to do with that. So this is something that you can actually change. So, you know, activists or Gene Bulk, let's go ahead and change it. We're all on the same side on this. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Got two more hours coming up. The Jason Rant Show.